Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I am coming to your phone calls in a moment. First, though, Cyrus, what do you think of that video I just sent you?
This is crazy. We cannot trust anything we see on the internet or on television.
Right.
It's social media. It's all suspect.
I'm telling you, and you and I have talked about this endlessly over the years, and it just this morning I saw this as I was doing my show prep. I'm going to describe it, and you tell me if I have an accurate description. So it shows a little boy, looks like a little boy, hard to tell, maybe 2 years old, who's on a very narrow concrete, like the top of a concrete wall that's hundreds, you know, I don't know, maybe not hundreds, maybe 50, 70 feet up in the air. And there's a waterfall that looks like it might be coming out of a dam, perhaps.
Yeah, it's probably some park, and there's a dam that you can look out at the rushing water, right. You know, and hear the awesome sound of it splashing down.
And he's on the, so there's like a metal fence to protect people, and this little kid is on the other side of the fence, like walking along the very top of this very high wall. And you can see a tree down there, and you can see the waterfall crashing
hundreds of feet.
Yeah, I mean it's
death. You fall, you're dead.
And this little child kind of stumbles, like he's about to fall over the edge. Why don't you take it from there? Why don't you explain it from that point?
Yeah, so he's walking along, and he's holding on to the bars of the fence to keep from falling. And then if you go a little, I just retweeted it, so if you want to check this out for yourself. Mm-hmm. And then if you go further into the video, you actually see that he's just walking on the sidewalk.
Yep.
And this is all visual effects.
Yep.
That make it look like this kid is in serious danger. But he's just walking on the street.
Just walking on the street. There's nowhere to fall.
There's nowhere to fall. There's literally nothing to fall on. It's just the more concrete.
Yep, exactly. So this, thanks for retweeting that, by the way. This is what is so helpful, I think, and kind of frightening too at the same time. You really can't trust what you see. Videos, and this is a rather elementary kind of stitching together of different elements to make it look like that. But if you didn't know, I mean, you'd look at that and say, this poor child, did he die? Because at one point he almost, you know, he does trip, but he's in no danger of death because it didn't really happen. What they show you is not reality. And so maybe this is a good time to remind everybody that when you're on social media, when you're on Facebook or Instagram or what have you, just recognize that there are stuff that's out there that's not real. You know, imagine if you see a video of Pope Francis tomorrow saying, you know, I don't know, I'm just something, you know, there are aliens or something like that, or I'm converting to Judaism or something like that. Or you heard some president or national figure saying we're about to bomb such and such a country. I mean, don't believe it without any kind of proof, without any kind of verifiable proof, because more and more now there's a lot out there that's just pure.
It's not even limited fakery. It's not even limited to social media. This is on, we get it on television, on the new, any kind of for-profit station. We're seeing it everywhere. We talk about, I think you mentioned it earlier in the show about how Russia is censoring their news, and they're giving reports that we're not going to see here to their own people. But
they're giving spin. They're telling falsehoods.
And we need to, our media, our for-profit media needs to be better than that and not do that.
But they're not.
I mean, we've seen it time and time again. Snake Island, did you hear about that?
Yeah, is that the one where you had, what was it, like 20
13.
Young...
It was okay. 13 Ukrainians were murdered. They, well, you know, they stood their ground,
it was
right?
More than that. So there, this is little bitty island. And I was trying to figure out, why do they call it Snake Island? I still couldn't figure it out. But so like a Russian warship shows up and says, surrender. And they say something vulgar in response. Mm-hmm. And then they get shelled to smithereens and they all die.
Right.
Not true, huh?
Not true. It's not only is it not, it's nowhere near true. There was 82 of them and they surrendered peacefully. And there's video of them being handed food and water by the Russians. Now, I'm not saying the Russian soldiers are the good guys here. I'm just saying the news that we saw and everyone reported on was absolutely false.
The heroic defenders of the motherland who died valiantly in the face of overwhelming enemy firepower, none of that actually happened.
That's right. And there's other photos floating around. There's one of this little girl holding a bunny. And there's all these soldiers rolling through, and she's holding hands with, you know, another kid, and it's showing that these soldiers are rolling in and taking over her, you know, almost like the Red Dawn thing that we were talking about earlier. But it's this is actually a photo from 2016, but they're treating it like it's brand new. There's another one, this little old lady that is all beat up and bandaged, and there's a whole story about how she stood up. This flowed. I saw this all over the place when I was looking for news on Friday, and how she stood up to this soldier and told him he needed to go home in no uncertain terms. Totally a fake story, not a hint of truth to it, but it gets reported like it's real. So we're better.
People want to believe it. People
we really
want
do. Right.
That to be true.
So we got
to
be careful of the propaganda that we're seeing.
Yeah. There was another one that. Has been floating around also in the last 48 hours or so about the so-called ghost of Dotensk or one of the cities in Ukraine. I'm probably mangling the name, but it's this sort of legendary Ukrainian fighter pilot who has shot down 6 or 8 or 10 or 12, depending upon which version of this legend you hear, Russian planes. And It apparently is completely without basis, and yet it's become a thing where a lot of people have, because they want to believe it, they do believe that it's true when in fact it's not. So absolutely, yes, misinformation.
Oh, wow, here's one. I just found another one.
Okay.
This is from someone with a little check mark, and it's like, Ukrainian soldiers leaving their loved ones to fight for their country. Absolutely heartbreaking. Has a little broken heart. And it's a photo of a soldier kissing his wife or girlfriend on the forehead.
I've seen this picture, yeah.
Okay.
Little girl.
Guess what? That's from a trailer for a Hollywood movie.
See? I haven't seen it. I've seen the picture, but I just assumed it was real.
So did I.
There was a movie called Wagging the Dog. It starred Dustin Hoffman and I forget who else.
Is that Al Pacino?
I don't remember.
That might be wrong.
But it was it wasn't a great movie. I'm not recommending it, but it was back in the 90s, it seems, and it was a movie about this where in order to get, I think it was like the president was caught in some kind of moral scandal or something. So as a way to get him out of it, they created this fake war that wasn't really happening, but they had news footage of it, and none of it was really real. So that was kind of a Hollywood version of what you're talking about. But yeah, was De Niro in that?
I get those guys mixed up. They're both great.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, Dustin Hoffman was in it too.
Yeah, and Dustin Hoffman. Yes. Yep.
Anyway. So yeah, word to the wise, just be really careful. And what tugs at your heartstrings, the video that tugs at your heartstrings, take a look at that little kid walking on this perilously high little ribbon of concrete way up above a waterfall. Cyrus just retweeted that, so you can find it on the Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show. Look at that and watch it, and your heart will skip a beat when the child trips and is about to fall over the edge, and then you realize that none of it's true. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
They should,
well, not
should
here
be,
on the Patrick
be,
Madrid
no,
Show,
not,
that's for sure.
That's right. This is these are for-profit media companies that we're getting this information from. But if you want the true good and beautiful, keep it tuned in right here.
Love it. Yeah. You're hired, Cyrus. Let's go to Diane in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Diane, thank you for your patience and welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I'll get right to it. I really try hard not to watch any shows with sex, and I try and stay away from profanity, which is mm-hmm. just so hard these days. But anyway, my husband and I have been watching this show called Murdoch Mysteries. It takes place in Canada in the 1890s. I don't know if you've seen it.
Okay.
It's like 15 years worth, 15 series. Anyway, we're into series number 2 the other night, and he is a very strong Catholic, and Catholics are not popular in Canada in that time frame. So anyway, the storyline moved to abortion, and there's this woman who is a scientist, a forensic scientist, okay. and she works in the morgue, and there was a love interest between the two, you know, and we're like, oh, hope they get together, da-da-da. Anyway, mm-hmm. we found, the last time I watched the show, I saw it coming, and I told my husband, I said, oh my gosh, I bet she had an abortion. Sure enough, she admits she had an abortion because she couldn't be bothered, and she wanted a career. And I just was livid, and I'm like, I'm not watching this show anymore. My blah, blah, blah. My husband's like, oh, I really mm-hmm. like that show, but okay, I'll respect that. Am I just being stupid? Okay, so nothing is ever going to change my mind on abortion. I'm 100% pro-life. There is nothing that would mm-hmm. change me. You had talked earlier about you are what you eat to that other caller.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm afraid of. And it's not going to change my husband. I know there's forgiveness for people who have abortion. And that's not the issue either. My issue is, people that are watching it that aren't as strong as me going to go, oh, you know what? She's a really nice person. If she can do it, it's okay. You know, look at it. And look how her life turned out okay. Am I just being stupid? Because I'm not going to change anything by not watching it.
Farthest thing from stupid to me, Diane. You sound like a very intelligent and very, you know, discerning person. I think I understand your dilemma. And on the one hand, you realize that this is not going to sway you or tempt you to go have an abortion or anything like that. But at the same time, maybe you're still feeling kind of torn because you don't want to, I don't know, you're not funding them because you didn't buy a ticket for this. You didn't pay them for this. But in a way, you don't want to support them by watching something for entertainment purposes that in some way promotes or glorifies abortion. Would that be a way of looking at how you feel about this?
Yes, it is. And one of my questions is, how are they going to know if I watch it or not? Am I making a stand for nothing?
You know,
my husband really wants to watch the show, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. well, maybe I'm just being bucky. I don't know.
Is
it sinful?
No, I don't think so. I think where it would become sinful would be if, let's say it wasn't abortion. Let's say it was some sexual scene. And as you're watching it, not necessarily you per se, but just whoever the person is watching it and saying, well, you know, I'm an adult. I can handle this and I can, you know, I won't let it bother me. But since we're weak creatures, inevitably for most people, that kind of thing can be harmful because it can lead to putting ideas in your mind, thoughts in your mind, etc. So this is what gets into what's called the near occasion of sin, which we're, as Catholics, we're aware of, that we should try to avoid the near occasion of sin. And so when you ask, is it sinful? It seems to me that if you were to recognize in your own life, under your own circumstances, that by allowing yourself to be in the near occasion of sin, knowing that although you might not be tempted to do something wrong, you might be tempted to do something wrong, that's where it could become sinful, is if you were to irresponsibly, foolishly allow yourself to be put in the near occasion of sin, that in itself can be sinful because it's a kind of recklessness. But in this case, nothing that you've described to me sounds like it's anything close to that, because you're seeing how they manipulate people's emotions by portraying the abortion as something favorable or understandable, and you recognize that this is going to have an effect on other people, but it's not having an effect on you, and you're not tempted to do anything.
Well, it is, because it kind of irritates me, and I don't like that. I'm mad that they're, mm-hmm. it has changed my perspective. I used to love the show, and now I'm like, how dare they try and manipulate me like that? And I just, so it has affected me in that
I
way.
See. Well, I think that's a legitimate reason to just turn it off, to say I'm not going to watch it because it's irritating to me and I don't believe in what they say. I've had moments like that where other TV programs or movies, I've just turned them off. Just last night, for example, Nancy and I were watching a movie and we tried to get through it and we got maybe 10 minutes into it, but it was so filled with profanity. And so filled with just gross, disgusting profanity. That was really the main thing. We looked at each other a couple times and said, this isn't worth it. And then after about 10 minutes, we just threw in the towel. It's like, we're not going to watch this because it was so, you know, offensive.
Well, that's
and that
offensive.
Was our limit.
I mean, that's just, yeah.
I think abortion is pretty offensive, too, if you ask me. In fact, I think abortion is more offensive than bad words.
I haven't watched it anymore, so I don't know. And you could just see on his face, he's like, oh, crap. And I know it's going to be a moral dilemma for him because he is very Catholic, makes a sign of the cross and everything. They kind of make fun of him for going to church all the time. And so anyway, I don't know where it's going to go from there. But my husband's like, oh, crap, okay.
Yeah, well, I would suggest just, you know, if it causes you heartburn, don't watch it. And I would leave it at that. Thanks, Diane. I appreciate it. Let's go now to Darren in Central Texas. Good morning, Darren.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. I got a couple of technical questions for you. First one is, for Ash Wednesday coming up, what are the requirements to go up and receive ashes? Do you have to be a Catholic, a Christian? Do you have to be baptized? Like, what specifically is required?
Anybody can receive ashes, so it's open to anybody, whether you're Christian or not. It's obviously intended for Christians in particular because it's a sacramental, but even non-Christians can make use of a sacramental. A non-Christian could have a blessed candle or holy water. A non-Christian can be blessed with ashes. So keep in mind that this is a primordial sign all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, where God said to Adam and Eve, remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return. And so this is the church's reminder to us that we're all mortal and eventually we will all die. But thankfully, Jesus has won the victory over death. So this is entirely open to anybody, regardless of their religious background.
Okay, great. Thanks for that clarification. Mm-hmm. Second question is, I have a good friend that's an Episcopal pastor, and I don't really know much about the different Protestant denominations, but we've been friends for a couple years. I ask him questions about their service or whatever. He finally invited me. He said, well, just stop by. It's Sunday, 10:15. We have service. I'm thinking, well, I mean, I'd like to hear him speak, and even so, Episcopal follow the same liturgical readings, I guess the same liturgical calendar. But
would you be doing? I mean, if you would be doing that in lieu of going to Mass on Sunday?
No, not in lieu of. No, I would still go to. No, I'd still go to Mass over the weekend. But aside from that, am I allowed to also then go to his service to listen to him speak? And if I do, what could I do when I'm there? Just sit in the pew, obviously not receive their Eucharist. You know?
Right. Yeah, you pretty much answered it there. You have the answer. So,
okay.
Yeah, you could do that. I don't recommend it for the average person. But in your case, you have a reason to go because your friend who's, you know, the preacher or whatever, he's inviting you to go to listen. So out of courtesy, you could do that. You could also do it to understand them a little bit better. But you're right, you wouldn't participate in that service at all. You'd be there as an observer. And that would be, I think, a polite way to handle it and say, yeah, sure, I'll come and listen. But definitely
so, I mean,
don't
stand up and sit down when they do that, but
yeah.
Don't go up to, like, I mean.
Yeah, you could. I mean, if it's customary to stand when they read the gospel, I would stand. I mean, you're standing out of respect for Jesus in any case. But if they asked you to, you know, I wouldn't kneel at their consecration because it's not a valid Eucharist, so there's nothing to kneel for. But I would try not to be rude or, you know, or to come across as I was trying to make a scene. I'm sure you wouldn't do that. But yeah, definitely don't go out to receive their communion because it's not the Holy Eucharist. And don't participate in any strict sense, but you could be there to observe it.
Don't participate in any what?
Strict sense. In other words, if they ask you to get up and offer a prayer, you know, or something like that, I would just politely decline. So.
And do you think it's a risk to my Catholic faith just being there?
that's something only you could answer. I mean, you'd have to know, or you'd have to say, to what extent are you strong in your Catholic faith? How susceptible are you to people maybe trying to convince you that your Catholic faith is not true? These are questions that you would have to ask. And if you can honestly say, well, I don't know how I would do, then maybe the best thing to do is to not go. But if you're strong in your faith and you know it, then, you know, to go one time to show courtesy, I could see that. Thanks, Darren. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Thanks again for listening. Let us go to Bob in Brandon, Florida. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Patrick. Quick question for you.
Sure.
Are you aware of any accounts where demonic possession can cause inexplicable and or medically inexplicable excruciating pain? And if so, I'd like to share what a friend of mine is experiencing and get your opinion whether it would be make sense to recommend that he seek the counsel of a priest that performs exorcisms, because obviously that could make for a very awkward discourse, and I didn't want to go through that if you didn't think it would make sense.
Well, okay, I think even without you telling me what your friend went through, but go ahead in any case, there is no question but that the evil one or people who are seeking to harness evil powers can cause inexplicable physical pain to people. So let's take the great saints who experienced beatings, for example, by the demons. St. John Vianney, the curé of Ars, is an example. St. John Bosco, St. Padre Pio, and others were at times visited by demons, often in their room at night when everyone else was asleep, and they would get thrashed physically. And it left bumps and bruises, and those were real injuries because the kinetic forces that the evil one would use would throw their bodies to the ground or against a wall, so they would sustain injuries as a result of that. And so that's real. That can happen. Another version of this, and this I'm going on from the basis of what trained and authorized exorcists have had to say, people like Father Gabriel Amorth as one example and others, have pointed out that there can, you know, there is reality to things like the evil eye and hexes and voodoo dolls and things like that. Now, we have nothing to fear from that if you're close to Jesus, but if God permits it, the evil spirits are permitted at times to cause bodily pain as a result of somebody trying to put a curse or a hex on somebody. And we think of a voodoo doll. When you push the pin into a certain part of the body, the idea is to make pain take place in that person's body, in that place. So these are phenomena that do at times happen. And it would never, of course, be something that you could attribute to God or to the good angels, but it would be through the nefarious powers of the evil one. So do you want to mention briefly the situation that your friend is in?
Yes, he's been on a consistent downward slide. Every time you talk to this guy, he's got something else going on. I mean, it all started with an extremely painful and ugly divorce. He didn't want to have a divorce. He is a strong Catholic, and because of the divorce, he now has a lot of alimony that's putting him under tremendous financial pressure. He's now experiencing issues with his company that, because of the supply chain, he might be out of work. He's been experiencing all kinds of anxiety attacks. Every time I talk to him, he cries every time I talk to him. He just breaks down.
All right. Let me jump in. Let me jump in, Bob.
Yeah.
It's possible that these are maybe in some way related to some diabolical harassment. But it's also entirely possible that these are just difficulties that he's experiencing that have nothing to do with any diabolical influence. It could just be the crosses that he's carrying right now. So I wouldn't be quick to assume that his downward spiral is attributed to devils, to demons. But since maybe there's reason to be concerned, there's certainly nothing wrong with him finding out at the diocese in which he lives if he could have an appointment with the diocesan exorcist. That's how it's done. So he's not going to be able to just look him up and phone him. But if he gets in touch with the appropriate office in his diocese, then they can relay the information to the exorcist. He'll make an evaluation. He'll make a determination whether or not there should be further follow-up. And if he determines that, well, maybe there's a reason to do that, then he can set an appointment. And then the man can help, you know, explain what's going on, and that would help the exorcist determine what, if anything, should be done beyond that. But that's the course of action I would follow if I were him.
Those symptoms I just shared with you weren't the items that made me think of seeking an exorcist. Besides what I just shared with you, over the last 2 or 3 years, he's been experiencing all kinds of, like, excruciating pain. He's gone to all kinds of specialists. They can't figure out what's wrong with him, and it's all over different parts of his body.
Right. And it may have a natural explanation, Bob, but it may be supernatural. So the best thing I can recommend to you is, if you are giving him advice, I would suggest that to him. Contact the diocese and see if they could put him in touch with the diocesan exorcist. And then the diocesan exorcist, who is trained in knowing how to discern, is this a natural phenomenon? Is this a supernatural phenomenon? And if there's any doubt, how to go about pursuing that. But that's where I would start if I were in his situation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Bob. Thank you. How about Mark now in Atwin, Texas? Good morning, Mark. Welcome.
It's Alvin, Texas.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. Sorry.
Alvin, your show really, you really present a lot of good points in your show, and I really enjoy them. But today was media manipulations, what I wrote down. And I wrote down how they do it. And we've had a here in the Houston area, we've had a little girl got shot and killed, and it was really sad. But they've shown that story about 5 times a day for about 5 days in a row. And I told my wife, how many children do you think might have committed suicide last night? That's, in other words, you'd have to be heartless not to feel for the little girl, because you do. But there's a lot of things that are going on that are real sad, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think they use those things to manipulate people.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's an old saying in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. And it means that the stories about violence and mayhem and murder, they're always much more not interesting like that they should be, but people are much more willing to read an article or watch a news program about something like that, as opposed to the good deed that somebody did that had a happy ending. That seems less attention getting than the violence does. So as to your point, I do agree with you that there is an incessant, just continuous attempt on the part of many different people for many different reasons to manipulate our emotions and thereby our actions by using the more and more sophisticated means of social media. So video, pictures, audio. When I think, Mark, about how many, I don't know, tens of thousands of hours of my voice that's recorded and out there, anybody could make me appear to say anything. Because there's probably very few words in the English language I haven't uttered into a microphone at one time or another. Mm-hmm. So with sophisticated and even maybe not so sophisticated computer technology, it would be extremely easy to make it appear as though I was calling for, you know, let's go kill all these people, or let's, you know, something I may never, I mean, obviously never said. But now it's hard to tell, and it can be even impossible to tell. And I think that's what the manipulation, it has reached such a dangerous level now, where you don't even realize you're being manipulated. You're being presented with something that looks absolutely real, and it may be absolutely false. your point.
I have one more short. I have one more short example if you'd like to hear it.
Sure. Yeah.
Locally, local news here has not shut up about COVID for about 2 years, but now all of a sudden they're talking about gun violence day after day after day. Hmm. What do you think that's about?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
When a country like Russia invades Ukraine and we see the Ukrainian people standing up against this encroaching, you know, other government, naturally people over here are going to look at that and say, what if that happened here? What would we do here? And I'm sure that there's probably some, at some level, a bit of an unease in, let's say, on the left, who generally hates the idea of gun rights in this country and maybe is a little bit worried that, I wonder if people here are going to get any ideas about what they're doing over there standing up to Russia. So maybe the gun violence might be a subtle way to try to counteract that kind of putting two and two together in the minds of some people. Well, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right, and I think I appreciate your show and the message that you try to give to people. And keep up the good fight.
Thank you, Mark. Kind of you to say so, and I'm glad to know you're out there listening. Thank you. As long as we're on the topic, Gizmodo has an article that you should read. It is a tech publication, and the headline is, "A hacker group has been framing people for crimes they didn't commit. A recent study shows the tactics and techniques of a cybercrime group that is known for planting incriminating evidence on the devices of activists in India." Now, you may say, well, that's India. Yeah, well, this can be done anywhere. It could be done on your computer. It could be done on your phone. For at least a decade, a shadowy hacker group has been targeting people throughout India, sometimes using its digital powers to plant fabricated evidence of criminal activity on their devices. That phony evidence has, in turn, often provided a pretext for the victim's arrest. A report published this week by cybersecurity firm SentinelOne reveals additional details about the group, illuminating the way in which its digital dirty tricks have been used to surveil and target human rights activists, human rights defenders, academics, and lawyers throughout India. The group, which researchers have dubbed Modified Elephant, is largely preoccupied with spying, but sometimes it intervenes to apparently frame its targets for crimes. Researchers wrote, quote, "The objective of Modified Elephant is long-term surveillance that at times includes the delivery of evidence, quote-unquote, files that incriminate the target in specific crimes prior to conveniently coordinated arrests." So to give you an example, so let's say that they don't like you for whatever reason, and it doesn't have to be Modified Elephant. There are people all around the world who could do this, and they can be anywhere in the world and do this to anybody. And let's say somebody decides to have a grievance against you and they plant pornography on your phone or on your home computer. It's not difficult to do that, as groups like this are able to do. And this is why phishing emails are so dangerous, phishing, phishing emails, that are intended to, when you click on a link, it downloads a program. It makes remote access tools able to use, so somebody on the other side of the planet can have access to your computer or to your company's system. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens all the time. So if you're thinking about these kinds of things, I encourage you, read this article. This is an article, again, from Gizmodo. It just came out within the last week or so. And it's indicative of the way in which we talked a little bit, Cyrus, about, you know, things you see on social media, like the kid who's about to fall over that cliff, you know, high above the waterfall. Not true. Didn't really happen. I mean, it's entirely manipulated. So whether it's video or audio or still pictures or text, for that matter, you can put something on somebody's phone or computer that they didn't put there. But how are you going to explain that? How are you going to explain when the cops show up and say, "We have a warrant for your arrest. We have a search warrant." Why? Well, we think that there is illegal pornography in this house. Well, you don't have to worry about me. I'm not me. And what do they find? Well, how do you explain this, sir? How do you explain this? Et cetera.
That's not mine.
Right. Right. You know, exactly. I remember years ago, 5-6 years ago, maybe longer, doing a story about one of Putin's enemies, talking about Putin again, one of his political enemies who doesn't even live in Russia. He's an old guy. He's probably dead by now, but he was an old guy living in New York. And he was like in exile because he was one of Putin's enemies. And he gets arrested and charged with child pornography because there's like child pornography files all over his computer. And he fought this, and it was determined that they were actually remotely put there, probably by Putin's goons. And they were trying to frame this old guy to make him go to jail. And he was innocent, but it sure didn't look that way. So, word to the wise. I would suggest having as robust security as you possibly can on your devices, honestly. I don't know what else to say. So that goes to one other thing, and that is if you see that somebody's been accused of a crime, accused of a crime like that, take it with a big grain of salt. There was a Catholic priest who seems, from everything I could tell, he's been exonerated, Father William Rutler. I've long admired Father Rutler, and I still do. He's a very good Catholic priest from everything I could see. His writing's very influential, a Catholic priest in New York. And a story came out in the last couple of years, two, three years, I forget exactly when, in which a young woman who is like a night watchman in the rectory, because it's like in Manhattan, she claims that he attacked her, you know, sexually. And she claims to have filmed him at his desk in his rectory watching pornography. And a friend of mine said, what do you think about this when this all came out? Because now you have some like video evidence, quote unquote, that this happened. What do you think about this? And my response was either he's guilty or this is a very sophisticated sting operation. Well, the New York Police Department, they investigated. They had all of their forensics people and all that. They declined to press any charges. So, as far as I'm aware, that amounted to basically an exoneration because they couldn't find any evidence that any of it was really real. So, considering the way these things can be done, you never actually see him. You see somebody sitting at this computer, but how easy it would have been to digitally modify video. She or somebody else, who knows who, could have taken a picture of him sitting at his desk looking at his computer and then simply modified what was on the screen. That's easy to do. And then it would appear as though, look, he's caught red-handed when in fact he didn't do it. Or to have somebody else sitting there who might vaguely resemble him or you for that matter if somebody's coming after you, and it would look videographically as if it were really you when it really wasn't you. So, although I don't remember if we ever talked about that story on the air, I'm happy to report that no charges were pressed and the case was dropped. And the New York Police Department said there really is nothing here, which tells me that they reviewed the so-called evidence and they found that it did not show that he was guilty of doing anything.
But technology is only getting better and better, and it's going to be harder and harder to prove these things
right.
Fake.
You're right. Oh, you're so right. I mean, so again, well, I don't think we have to put too fine a point on this. I mean, it's self-evidently dangerous. And all the more reason to the point that you were making earlier, Cyrus, about how you can't believe what you see on social media. My advice would be don't believe it as true unless you have absolute verifiable proof that it is true. And in some cases, how are you going to even get that? So we have to be extra careful nowadays. Ain't it the truth? You know, there are times when I think, you know, wouldn't it be great to go back to pre-internet times? We can't, but sometimes it seems a little tantalizing.
Well, if there's a cyber attack, you might get your wish.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. That was a bad joke. Sorry.
We'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line.
For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I thought this was funny, Cyrus. El Presidente, he tweeted a couple of days ago, because, you know, we have the new, his nominee for the Supreme Court. We have a justice vacancy coming up. And so El Presidente, he said, I sought a nominee with the strong, this is on Twitter. I sought a nominee with the strongest credentials, record, character, and dedication to the rule of law. That's why I'm excited to nominate Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to serve on the United States Supreme Court. So Jordan Peterson, Dr. Jordan Peterson, of recent fame, he's a he's an academic. He just recently retired from academia because of all the craziness on the left there. But he's a thinker and a commentator. And he said, in response, he says, no, you didn't. You announced publicly that you would limit the search to a specific sex and race. You eliminated the vast majority of qualified candidates from consideration. And it is thereby virtually certain, technically, that you failed to pick the strongest candidate. I thought that was an appropriate insight. Because, I mean, does it really make sense to say ahead of time, I'm going to restrict my search for whoever's going to fill a particular job to only one racial group? I don't think that's fair. I mean, if in fact this judge were the most qualified, and maybe there are other strategic reasons that would make her even more competitive, so be it. Fair enough. That's fine with me. You know, hip, hip, hooray. But to artificially narrow the field to one specific racial group and say, oh, I'm sorry, your skin is the wrong color. Your kind need not apply. Oh, you're Hispanic? I'm sorry, your kind need not apply. Oh, you're Asian? Oh, I'm sorry, your skin color is the wrong color. Your kind need not apply. That's, in essence, what President Biden said.
Maybe we have it wrong about what it takes to be on the Supreme Court. Maybe it, you know, you need every ethnicity. Like you need a Jew and a Catholic, and you just,
well, those
you
aren't ethnicity. Jewish is ethnic in a certain sense. That's true.
But you understand where I'm going.
We'd have like 750 different Supreme Court justices if we were to fulfill every possible niche.
So that must not be it.
There was a time, Cyrus, and you're a student of history, I know that you know this, when in these United States it was common, you know, before the turn of the previous century, you know, in the 1800s into the early part of the 20th century, it was not at all uncommon in big cities for businesses to have signs out in the window saying Irish need not apply. Yeah, we've got jobs available, but not for your kind. So don't even bother. Don't even come in and ask for an application because you're the wrong kind of person. We don't want your kind of person working here. That was extremely common. And in WASPy America, a lot of that had to do with the fact that the Irish were overwhelmingly Catholic. You know, because they looked like the shopkeeper, you know. So I can tell you're poised. You want to say something else, but you're deliberating. Should you? Shouldn't you? Should go ahead.
No. I'm good.
You're thinking better.
We'll continue to have racism as long as these practices that El Presidente, as you like to call him.
I call every president El Presidente.
You do, and you.
I've called Ronald Reagan El Presidente. Yeah. Some people get worked up over. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, they do. We keep acting in a racist manner. We're going to continue to be a racist country.
Somebody called me a racist for playing that Taco Tuesday song. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro tacos. And they said, how racist is that? And it's like, tacos
are
part of the glory of Mexico. And come on, man.
That is a come on, man.
If ever there were one. All right, moving forward, let us go.
Come on, man.
I know. I'm with you on that one, Maddie. And I'm half Mexican, by the way. So let's go to Peter in Dodge County, Wisconsin. Hello, Peter.
Hello. There's a little known historical fact that is not covered in the United States because most of the emphasis is on the rise of Hitler in our books and the Depression and the Dust Bowl in the United States, but this is the second time the mainstream Russian or Soviet government has really stuck it to the Ukraine. The Ukraine is a very rich agricultural region, very much similar to southern Wisconsin and Illinois and Iowa.
It's known as the breadbasket of Europe.
Okay. Now, the Soviet Union wanted to get rid of these very prosperous family farms and collectivize them in the 30s. They starved out that whole region at one point in the 30s.
Right. They're called the kulaks.
The kulaks. They're very up on this. I'm surprised.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you're surprised? Peter, who do you think you're talking? I'm just joking. No, I'm a student of history, like you. I'm interested in the fine details. But please proceed, sir. I'm all ears.
Well, they more or less starved to death people in a very good farm region.
They made the farmers plant and harvest the crops, and then they took all of the wheat and everything away and didn't leave anything for them. So they starved on their own farms after producing all this wonderful food.
Right. And then they had these 5-year plans, and they collectivized these farms. And a young woman locally, just 10 years ago, she went to help on Russian farms, and she said, "You wouldn't believe it. It's just like a trip back to the 1940s in Wisconsin. They're just, 5 or 6 people doing it. 1 or 2 would do on an American farm." She couldn't believe the inefficiency of these collective farms.
Okay, so that being the case, I know you're leading up to a point. What is the point?
What is the point? Has anybody besides you and myself ever heard of this? And I heard that 6 million people died by starvation. What's the number you heard?
That's usually the figure that's used. I suppose there are some unofficial deaths, but 6 million is the common figure for what Stalin did to the Ukrainians.
I guess my point is this isn't the first time the Ukraine has got stabbed in the back.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, that's true. It is true.
Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Peter. Nice chatting with you. And always nice to encounter a fellow student of history. Let's go to Scott now in northern Michigan. Hi, Scott.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. I was calling to ask do we as Catholics have something like kosher? Do we have it, or did we have it in history at any point where we would,
you'd see the kosher food
in the grocery store, things like that? Yeah. Yeah, is there some sort of equivalent to that? If I wanted to bless have a food product, maple syrup.
No, there's never been. It's interesting that you asked the question, Scott. So going all the way back to Acts chapter 10, when St. Peter received the revelation from God in the form of a dream that no longer were certain animals unclean, but that all animals, in other words, pork, shellfish, etc., that had previously been forbidden to the Jewish people, were no longer forbidden. So in Acts chapter 15, he and St. James in Jerusalem and the other apostles, they deliberate on this, and they announce this, that this is the church's teaching, that you are no longer bound by those things. So since then, there has never been the equivalent of a kosher law in the Catholic Church.
Now, how about something to be blessed? Say, can I have my syrup blessed by a priest? Would that be appropriate to ask him?
Sure, yeah.
To say, hey, here's my warehouse. Can you bless all these cases?
You can, but keep in mind that the church does not permit the sale of blessed articles. So you'd want to be careful there. You could have him bless the warehouse.
Maybe.
But I wouldn't have him bless the product.
Is that it's blessed?
Well, what I'm saying is that, technically, if it's blessed, the church says you can't sell a blessed item, because that gets into like trafficking and things like that. But I mean, if you wanted him to bless your warehouse or your farm or your implements or your, you know, your field, that's fine. Sure, that's fine.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. That was it. I mean, I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.
You got it. Yeah, I know. I've heard that before somewhere, but you got it, Scott. I always do, and I always will. Thanks for the call. It wouldn't be fair to try to put somebody on the air right now only because we don't have enough time, but we have a whole hour coming. So all of you who are waiting on the phones, I do thank you for your patience. Please hang on the line. I'm going to come to you right after we come back from this quick timeout. If you'd like to send me a message on Twitter, my address
Patrick,
there is,
tell us.
I will. I will. You can send me a message at Patrick Madrid. And Cyrus, did you see that picture I posted with a somewhat different mustache?
Sure.
Talking about fake news and media manipulation, and you go and put on this fake photo up on Twitter.
Is it real or is it not real?
It's no way
is it
real.
Take a look and see what you think. It's on my Twitter feed. I'll be right back.